is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. The only thing we have to fear is...
Today's show is brought to you by Pekarsky Orthodontics. Dr. Pekarsky has been voted by New Jersey Monthly Magazine as the top orthodontist in 2011 and 2012. Dr. Pekarsky has two great locations, one in Wayne, New Jersey at 150 Hinchman Ave. Their telephone number is 973-942-0900. And also visit him at his new location at 5677 Berkshire Valley Road in Oak Ridge, New Jersey. Their telephone number is 973-545-2391. And also visit him on their website at www.pekarskyortho.com today.
Welcome back to AutismRadio.org, home of the world's first autism support radio network and proud 501c3 charitable organization, helping families challenged with autism every day get services they desperately need. Please help us make a difference in the autism community and find it in your heart to support 1 in 88 families in America today. Donate directly at AutismDonation.org. Now, stay tuned for a special broadcast of Hope Saves the Day with autism activist, super dad and author of The Spectrum Diet, master chef and the Hope Man himself, your host, Paul Simmons.
Thank you for that great introduction, as always. It's great to be back on another edition of Hope Saves the Day. Today we have a very special guest, and we also like to welcome everyone to our first show of National Autism Awareness Month, as we're very, very excited, as April's a very busy month for us all at AutismRadio.org. And we have a great guest today who happens to be a licensed clinical psychologist and a certified school psychologist who specializes in assisting children and their families with autism, ADHD, anxiety, and learning and behavioral disorders in Parsippany, New Jersey. Her company name is the Psychological and Educational Consulting Company, and we'd like to welcome to the program Dr. Liz Mathias.
Thank you. Thank you so much. What an honor and a pleasure it is to kick off Autism Awareness Month. Thank you.
Yes. No, we're very, very happy, and I know you have so much to add that can help so many parents out there with your experiences. First, we'd like to get started just by telling our listeners how you got started in working in psychology, and especially with children with autism.
I've always had an affinity to work with children. I mean, as soon as I could get my hands on the little ones, I was went to church as a kid, and when I kind of felt like I was outgrowing it, I wanted to be a Sunday school teacher, and I wanted to teach the youngest class, and they were notorious for being the most difficult, but I just loved them, and I had such a good connection with kids, and I did that at 18, and I did it for a very long time, and just as I progressed in college, I knew that I wanted to do psychology and I wanted to be with kids. And so my natural affinity has always been to work with children, to get to understand them and just help them to be happy and well-adjusted. And, you know, I'm kind of a hopeless optimist in that way. So I feel like if I can help one child to be happy, then I've done my job really well for ever and ever. So as I progressed through graduate school, the natural place for me was to go and work with the kids, and it wasn't until after I graduated that I decided I want to go back to the school, and I want to make, I want to have an impact there. So after I finished my doctoral training, I went back and took more classes, if that can be believed, and got certified and went and worked in the school. I worked in the public schools on the child study team for several years, and then kind of found the natural path. I went to work in a private school for kids on the autistic spectrum and just got to develop such a nice connection with the parents and the kids, children, the adolescents, the young adults, and I just felt very comfortable working in that area, and so it became my thing. And when I became pregnant with my third, I left the school system and decided to do private practice solely, and just to be able to manage a family of three and still be here, but still be a professional. And so here I am, working with kids on the autism spectrum, their families, their schools, kids with anxiety, ADHD, and being an advocate, kind of going in and helping parents to advocate for what their kids need with their IEPs and with the child study team, testing the kids and sending in the reports to the child study team. So I feel like whatever I'm doing, it's always with children, with their families, with their homes, with their schools. And I'm a big picture person. I don't think you can really focus on any one aspect of a child's life without looking at all of them. So it's just where I fell and where I feel like I got really comfortable and loved it and felt like I could make an impact. So here I am.
Oh, that's great, Dr. Liz. You know, IEPs are such an important part of a child's, you know, obviously education. But, you know, I think a lot of times parents, they don't really know what an IEP is. Can you explain to the audience and some people that might not even know what an IEP is?
Sure. An IEP stands for an Individualized Education Plan. And it's a legal document that is law, you know, regulated by law. And it's a document that classifies a child based on an eligibility category. So a child can come in with ADHD and they can be eligible under category with autism and they can be eligible under category anxiety, a learning disability, and there are many others. And then the key difference between an IEP and other types of plans for children, such as a 504 accommodation plan or an INRS plan, is that there is a program. The child needs an academic program, such as in-class support or pull-out replacement resource, and the curriculum needs to be modified in some way so the child can access it because of their special need. And it is a legal document, and you have to work with your child's study team to get it, and you have to be eligible and meet the criteria. There's a lot of subjectivity and leeway, as we all know, and as many parents who have asked me to come in and serve as their advocate, to go in and help them understand all the nuances of the law, because I was a school psychologist on the child study team and I wrote the IEPs. I know what the law states. You know, parents are emotionally involved, and so when I come in, I can speak to the child's needs clearly. I can speak the same language as the child study team members, and again, as much as you know, I'm there as a person who cares about the child, but I don't have that emotional involvement. So I can stay objective and I can stay focused on the goal. And, you know, if a parent needs to cry, I'll give them a tissue and kind of give them a shoulder to lean on, but we can move on because my goal is to come out with a program that's going to meet the child's needs.
Oh, that's great. And it is just such an important, you know, part of the child's future and education in the school system.
Yeah.
And like I said, a lot of times parents don't know where to begin or where to start. And, you know, sometimes they might give them an IEP that might not be fit for them. And it's really important sometimes to have someone like yourself sitting beside that parent to help kind of coach them to make sure they're getting the proper services that that specific child needs. Because every child
is
different, obviously. That's why we have
of
the spectrum.
Course. And also to recognize that it is a fluid document, meaning that it's not something that has to be revisited on an annual basis only. You can have an IEP meeting every day. Not that anyone really wants to, but they can. And that, you know, holding the teachers and the child study team members accountable for the progress that you want your child to make and coming back and having regular meetings. You know, what are we doing? What strategies are you working academically, socially, emotionally, behaviorally? Where do we need to go next? And that's something that I really push a lot of parents to do, is to have that consistent communication with the teachers and the child study team members to say, okay, what's working? How is my child making progress on their goals? Because we can't just put it away for a year. A child grows so much in 1 year and makes so many changes, and we need to kind of have tabs on where we're going. And it needs to be something that everyone agrees upon and with multiple perspectives, and that's really key.
Right, right. You know, absolutely. You know, one of the specialty areas that I know you work with a lot, you work with a lot of parents, especially with, obviously, with autism, but stress of parenting a child with autism obviously puts a lot of stress on a marriage. And I know you deal with that a lot in your practice.
And it's, you know, parenting a child with special needs is, and it's a big stressor, as parenting just children in general is a stressor. But, you know, there's the added stress of parents needing to make a lot of decisions and realizations and grieve and accept, process on a regular basis the reality that is in front of them, and to celebrate also, and to celebrate the progresses that are made, and to congratulate the child, and to push the child. And I'm a big fan of that too. If your child is showing you they have the capacity to do more, then you need to push them so they can do more, because then they grow. But it is a stressful process. And, you know, a lot of times you'll see one parent becomes the stay-at-home parent who does a lot of the research about the therapies and goes to the therapies and goes to the school meetings and the IEP meetings and all of that, and the other person becomes the breadwinner. And sometimes the parent at home often feels like he or she is doing all of the work. And it's stressful. It's very stressful. I mean, not that it's not stressful for the person who goes to work and has to be the breadwinner, because there's a stress of that, needing to provide financially for all the therapies and the needs of the family. But it does take a toll. And it's, you know, one thing that I help parents do is to find the balance between giving the parent on the front line a break and finding time for the couple to be a couple. So finding a family member or babysitter to come in for a couple of hours while the two parents can go out for a little bit and just take a break. And there's, you know, other things that they can do together just to keep the bond going, and it doesn't become like us and them and me and you against whoever. There's a lot of triangulation that happens in families and just resentment that builds. So keeping that communication of, I'm stressed. Right now I'm looking up occupational therapy and sensory diets and the brushing program, and let me tell you what that is, and just letting the other parent ask questions and support and say, thank you. Thank you for doing the research. Thank you for doing that. So just, you know, keeping the other person feeling like what they're doing is being recognized and to validate it, because we all need that. We all need that as people in our jobs, in our homes, in our relationships. So, you know, finding therapies or something, doing the research together if that's a possibility, and finding also just the balance in the home.
Yeah, and you work a lot with the parents, both parents. I guess you work with them together and separate as well in your practice.
You know, I of course would love if both parents could come all the time, but because one parent is the breadwinner and can't always be here, we'll do phone conferences, or we'll Skype the other parent in. Because I want that perspective. And sometimes we rotate. One parent will come in, the other parent will come in. Ideally, we just want to keep the parents aligned and finding out, like, where are the sources of stressors for you? Is it needing a break? Is it needing, you know, help with household responsibilities? Even though one person is home, it's still not humanly possible to care for the children and then take care of all of the household responsibilities. So we have to find a balance there. So each person takes whatever it is that they're good at and wants to do. And then using services that are available to us, like food shopping online, paying your bills online, finding shortcuts and taking them so there isn't a ton of stress on one person only, because these household things are never ending, as we all know. And then there's the emotional part of, I want to spend time with my child, and I want to connect to my child, and I want to appreciate my child and children if there are more, you know, more than one child in the house. So it's really pinpointing where are you in disagreement, where are you not aligned as a couple, as parents, and let's find ways to help the two of you communicate and then become connected again. Because that's the key thing. There's just a disconnection. Everyone goes off into their corner and does their thing, and there's a sense of isolation, even though everybody lives in the same house.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, do you ever run across, like, especially moms, and I've heard this myself from a lot of moms, where they kind of blame themselves, like they did something wrong when they find out their child has autism. Do you find
that? Yes, for sure. And I was just met with one mom this morning who said, like, I just feel like I'm to blame. And I said, there's absolutely nothing that you can say with a pure definitivity that you are to blame for this. You know, what exactly did you do? I mean, if that's the case, then you better start blaming yourself for when it rains and when it snows and for hunger. Like, you have to then blame yourself for everything if you're going to go down that route. And her hearing that just made her realize she was being silly. And so she laughed. She's like, no, I can't blame myself for when it rains. I said, so how are you going to blame your child for being on the autistic spectrum? You know, that's something that just happened. you know, I don't know how it happened, you don't know how it happened, but you have this amazing child who has brought so much warmth and love to you and your family, so why go there? And so I really try to discourage, I say, you know, if you find yourself going there, you have to talk to yourself, use your self-talk skills and say, stop, I'm not going there because this is useless and it's just a downward spiral. What are you going to benefit from this?
Right.
So, you know, using our self-talk capabilities instead of talking yourself down, talk yourself up.
You know, one of the things, like, I remember, you know, when real early on when my son was diagnosed with autism, you know, one of the things I was told by the pediatric neurologist that my son would not be loving. And the funny thing is that's like the furthest thing from the truth because he's just a little snuggle bug and love bug. And I hear that from so many parents that a lot of their kids are very loving. And it's like it's almost like they made a stereotype that our kids weren't going to be, you know, loving or affectionate. And it's kind of funny. And I don't know if you've come across that in your practice as well. Like,
I think there are definite stereotypes that go on. But one thing we definitely know about any child with special needs is everybody is so unique. Everybody is so unique. And so the profile is going to be unique. And, you know, you also, there's a temperament and there's, you know, who doesn't want to be loved? You know, unless there's some clear-cut sensory issues, but then you love in another way. It doesn't mean that your child doesn't want to be loved and doesn't want to have that warmth and affection. It just may need to happen in a different way. And you need to find that, you know, what's comfortable for your child. But, you know, the stereotypes are plenty. And, you know, I'll say to parents, well, we know that's not true, so let's not talk about that. Let's move on to something else.
Right. You know, what can parents expect, like, in the area, especially here in New Jersey, if they wanted to come and see and make an appointment, you know, to use your services? I mean, how often would you meet with parents? Is it a weekly thing, or is it more than once a week, or what is typical, like, if parents are, you know, dealing with the stresses of the, you know, raising a child with special needs and it's really putting a lot of strain on their marriage, where do they usually start if they want to come?
Well, usually to start, we'll meet on a weekly basis, and then as they're making progress and they don't need to come as often, we'll move on to a biweekly basis. And especially in the beginning, because there's so much emotion. There's so much emotion that needs to be processed. I like to have that ability to meet on a regular basis. Once a week, usually, I don't usually exceed once a week, to just sit down and talk, process in a safe environment, process in a place where you're not going to be judged, in a place where, you know, as insane or as ugly as you think your thoughts are, it's okay. Because you're probably not alone. In fact, you're not alone. Someone else has
important.
Had those thoughts.
Yeah, that's a very, very important point, because, you know, I think that's the biggest thing, is that parents do feel alone a lot of times and feel isolated from a lot of others.
They do feel isolated because of whatever reason, sensory reasons or whatever, that they can't be in certain places and that other parents just don't get it, or they feel like they're being judged. And so it's also for a parent establishing their confidence to go out and knowing that, okay, so people are going to stare, because that's what people do. And it's just getting comfortable with the fact that, you know, people can look and people can judge if they say so want, but this is my child, this is how I'm going to handle it, and that's it. And you may or may not come across that person again in the future. And if you do and they seem confused, explain it to them. You know, and I think it's just gaining that confidence as a parent. And it very much parallels your child's development socially and emotionally and behaviorally, of going out into social situations and being comfortable to interact and join and all that good stuff. But I think for parents, there's just an embarrassment of, you know, I don't want anyone to see how difficult my child is or how whatever my child is. And, you know, I really discourage parents from even letting that thought going through their head. And I'll say, and the next time you go into the mall and your child does have a meltdown, like every child has a meltdown, take your child to the side, meet his or her needs first. And, you know, we don't care about the strangers. Strangers are always going to look. We just have to, you know, make peace within ourselves and get through that, and then everything will be okay.
That's great. That's some great advice for, you know, a lot of parents that are listening to you today on this program. You know, one of the things I wanted to talk about a little bit before we go is that I know you do a lot of popular press magazines and a lot of blogs. You know, talk a little bit about some of the things that you do with that.
I really enjoy the writing. I never, ever imagined in my life that I'd be doing that, but I love kind of sending out quick blogs about, you know, a thought about parenting. I'm with, it's called Blue Suit Mom, and it's for a blog for working moms. It's not necessarily geared towards parents of children with special needs, but I kind of throw things in there anyway because it applies to all parents, of just how parenting can really be a very frustrating task, and you know, that we're not alone. And that's another message that I do want to go back to, is we are not alone, and there's a lot of parts to parenting that's very ugly and not glamorous and not fun at all. And it's like, there's moments where it's like, it's not great. And then you have moments where you're like, ah, this is why I love my children. This is why I'm going to keep them for the next day or two. And at least that's what I think on a very regular basis. But it's, you know, saying and it being able to admit to yourself that this isn't what I signed up for. This isn't what I thought it was going to be. And going back to revisit all those lovely dreams we had about parenting and what we thought it was going to be like and how it's really not. But then figuring out how we're going to make it work.
No, that's great. That's great advice. And, you know, that can be, definitely help anybody that does read your blogs, obviously. It can help.
Yeah, and I'm the Autism Expert for Parents.com, the magazine online, and I get a lot of questions from there. And for different dreams blog, I blog over, that's strictly for parents of children with special needs, just different magazines that I've really enjoyed writing articles for, sometimes on a topic of interest, sometimes it's just about whatever is coming through the office a lot and is through my office here, and it's on my mind, and I find myself, you know, talking about it a lot, and so I'll write an article or a blog on it, and so I'm really enjoying that, and, you know, being able to get feedback is the most rewarding thing I can say is about putting that out there.
Well, Dr. Liz, you're doing some really amazing work and helping so many people through your practice and also your blogs. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we all need help. I think that's probably one of the biggest things, as you know, is a lot of times people are afraid to ask for help and seek help.
Yeah.
And
yep.
I think that's why it's really important to have you on today to tell the parents out there. It's not to be embarrassed to ask for help.
Absolutely not. We're all in this together, you know, and our children. You know, I think the label with special needs really applies to every single child on the planet. Nobody has a child who doesn't have a need or a special need of some sort. So we are all in this together. We got to figure out ways to laugh about it and to get through the moment and the day, and then to celebrate all the good moments that we do have with our children.
Well, that was great. I couldn't put it better, Dr. Liz. Also want to give out your website where people can visit it. And of course, we're going to put this on autismradio.org as well, where they'll be able to visit. But if you want to give out your website so people can come and learn more about you and your practice.
Yes, it's www.psychconsult.weebly.com. My office number is 973-400-8371. Really look forward to hearing from everyone and hearing people's thoughts and, you know, if there's a blog idea that they would like to hear about or anything. I'm just so open to people's thoughts and ideas, and I love feedback. So please contact me.
Oh, that's great. And we really want to thank Dr. Liz Mathias for coming on today on Hope Saves the Day. Gave out some really great information and great tips to parents that are listening at home. And really, if you need help, you know, please feel free to give her a call or visit her website and learn more about it. Like I always say, you know, if you're going to be a great athlete and you want to be a pitcher, you get a pitching coach. If you need help in your life, you need a life coach, or you need someone to help you with some of your emotional problems, or help you with your child, especially with special needs. So just want to really thank you for spending some time with us today on Hope Saves the Day, Dr. Liz.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. This has been such an honor to be on the radio with you.
Oh, that's great. And well, great way to start off our National Autism Awareness Month with Dr. Liz Mathias. Is a clinical psychologist, and she just does amazing work in the autism community. So be sure to visit autismradio.org's website. We'll have the links on there, her contact info as well. So if you're struggling with something at home, there's no reason to struggle. Please feel free to contact her. So we want to thank all our listeners, as always, for continued support here on the program on Hope Saves the Day. And remember, everyone, until next time, Hope Saves the Day. Have a great week. Good night, everyone.
Did you know that families that pray and or meditate together each day are found to improve health, build closer bonds, improve communication, argue and even fight less, and create a family that's happier in the home? Please subscribe to the new Meditation and Emotional Development channel on YouTube at kidscanmeditate.com and download the world's first meditation song by Brian Simmons called Meditate With Me. The theme song, the self-titled home meditation program and app due out later this year. Visit kidscanmeditate.com for more details.
Every time I see your smile, I wonder what you feel. Every time you laugh or cry, I wonder if it's real. You seem trapped inside. Please help me understand, what is your world like? I want to feel your love. I want to know what it's like to laugh and play. Imagine a thought that you cannot feel, a tear trapped inside. Imagine a sound that you cannot make, no matter how hard you try. I want you to know how I'm feeling. I want you to know how it feels to be me. I wish you could look into my world and see how I see. Hold my hand and remind me to hold on to hope. Each day, let this song be my voice. And remember, hope saves the day. I want to show you what I see, what kind of life will I have? What's in store for me? Don't be afraid, just love and hold me. I can be all that I can be. With your love I can do anything. With your love I can see the world like rays of light shine upon me, inside of me. Then you are right by my side. I will love you to the end of time. Hold my hand and remind me to hold on to hope. Stay, let this song be my voice. And remember, hope saves the day.